their secret mountain lair somewhere in Colorado, this is the Image Doctors Photography Podcast with your hosts, Jason Odell and Rick Walker. I'm Jason Odell.
And I'm Rick Walker.
And welcome back to another episode of the Image Doctors Photography Podcast. How's it going, Rick?
It's going fine.
Cool. Lots of stuff to talk about today. A bunch of new Nikon announcements, right?
Yep. And as you were saying just before we started, this is when we could subtitle, It's About the Gear.
Yeah, it's episode. A gear episode. It is.
So well, most people like those.
So before... Our last episode came out, there was a bunch of announcements from Nikon, as well as other, I mean, there's a bunch of stuff came out last week from a lot of different manufacturers, but we're going to focus on the Nikon announcements today, because those probably align best with what we shoot.
Yep.
So we had three big products.
Well, and just to leak the other stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So then we'll talk a little bit about the Z6 and 7 firmware updates and what we've seen with the changes to autofocus tracking and some ideas for how to use that that may not be what you're thinking of.
And a super secret, top secret, don't tell anybody announcement, right?
Ooh.
That we might be getting together and doing a workshop?
Yeah. So since you've already...
Oh, I wasn't supposed to say anything about it.
I guess we have to talk about it now.
No, we are putting together a workshop for...
Maybe two of them.
Yeah, maybe two. But for sure, we're looking into getting a workshop here in Colorado Springs, where we live, for the Nikon Z6 and 7 to cover not just use of the cameras, but more practical use of the cameras, things that we've learned over time. And like we were talking about before the show, the things you don't necessarily get in the books.
Mm-hmm.
Camera books are great, but oftentimes they're produced in a way to get them to market first before people have really had a chance to truly use the cameras. And we've been shooting the Zs for a while. I mean, I'm coming up on almost a year, and you've had it for almost 2 years now.
Yeah.
So we've kind of had a chance to put it through the paces, try the new firmware, for example, and really try these cameras in a variety of circumstances.
Yeah.
So if you're a Nikon Z user and you want to get more in depth with your camera, or just learn it, or if you're even thinking about, maybe you're thinking about getting a Z camera, this might be the kind of workshop that would suit you.
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll have more details on that. We're hoping to put it on in mid-May, but it's subject to availability. We're trying to lock down some rooms for it, some space. But let's talk about the good stuff that just came out from Nikon. The biggest announcement, I guess, is the D6 flagship DSLR, right?
Mm-hmm.
So sixth generation now. This is the monster camera. The main features on it, when I looked at it, the two things that stand out the most for me is that it bumps up from the D5 to from 12 to 14 frames per second shooting. Mm-hmm. So this is an action camera, let's be clear. And they really revamped the autofocus module. So it's a brand new autofocus module. It's a little more sensitive in lower light than the D5. But now instead of 99 cross-type sensors, it's 105 cross-type sensors.
It's a wee bit more.
Right. But in this particular case, they've reduced the number of overall sensors.
Yeah.
From 153 to 105, but all of them are cross-type.
Right.
Which, if you're an autofocus junkie, you know those are more sensitive to contrast in, or phase in different angles, different directions.
Yeah. So, and I think as we get more information on it, we'll probably find some interesting subtleties with that new autofocus system. I suspect it's very good. My own take on it is it's, you know, an alternative name for it would have been D5S, and that probably would have been a little bit more in the spirit of the prior ones, you know, just a little bit more minor evolutionary change.
Because the ISO range is about the same. Mm-hmm. The sensor is still the 20.8 megapixel sensor that the D5 has.
Mm-hmm.
There may, of course, be tweaks to it. We just don't know.
Right.
So until we start to see some images and get details on that,
yeah,
that's a guess. But this is a camera for, and they added GPS.
Yep.
Into the body.
And built-in Wi-Fi.
So there's some things. If you are a pro and you're shooting action, sports, outdoors, to some extent nature, but, you know, you're shooting for clients who demand, you know, you're in environments where you need to, you know, upload your photos instantly, this is probably the camera that you're going to have. Because it's a real niche market at this point.
Yeah.
For this camera. And the price tag to match. It costs just under $6,500 US.
Yeah, which is what the D5 was going for.
Right.
They've dropped the price like $1,000 to clear them out. But it is the same price that D5s were going for.
Correct.
But, you know, to me, it makes sense if you do a lot of that work. I mean, heavy-duty work, not lightweight, amateur stuff. And you've got an older body that's kind of wearing out and you need to replace it, then this would be glorious.
Right. I think it uses a new battery, too, so it might have a little more capacity.
Yeah.
So it's still an EN-EL18 variant, but it's now the 18C.
Oh, okay. So it'll still work.
It's still going to be backwards compatible.
Yeah.
But, you know, realistically, this is Nikon's best autofocus system, most responsive camera for those who really, really demand it.
Mm-hmm.
Because between that and anything else, you know, when I've talked to colleagues and clients who have a D5 and maybe a D850, really the discriminator with the D5 is they don't talk as much about the frame rate as they talk about the autofocus.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing else that Nikon offers will autofocus probably as well. One neat function in the D5 and the D6 is that you can customize, and I think the D6 allows you to do this more, but you can customize the patterns in the group autofocus mode,
right,
which is something we talked about. Whereas in the D850, you get just the sort of the grid, the square. You can do linear patterns, vertical, horizontal, all kinds of stuff with the D6.
Now, one quirk, and then we'll get on to the other announcements. If you compared the dynamic range of the D4 and D4S cameras to the D5, the D5 had less, which was kind of a strange thing.
Oh, a lower dynamic,
at lower ISOs.
Uh-huh.
So we'll see what happens with the D6. That, you know, for the way the camera is intended to be used, it's not a big deal, but it's just something to realize.
Right. When the D5 was known for having good dynamic range, though, at the higher ISOs.
Right.
So it didn't,
but not at low ISOs.
Right. It didn't get a boost at the low ISOs that dropped off. It just sort of was more of a flat curve. So we'll see what the D6 is. I mean, who knows? Maybe Nikon's put some engineering in there. We didn't see anything discussed in any of the marketing materials that came out when the camera was released, nor do either of us have one on pre-order.
No, so. No. And we're not planning to get them. It doesn't suit what we shoot these days. But I have a hunch they would have said it if it had improved dynamic range. Anyway.
Yeah, we'll
find
out.
I'm sure it's nice.
But if you need 14 frames a second and the best autofocus, this is your rig.
Yep.
Here it is. The other two are lens announcements.
Yep, for the Z system.
And we'll start with the first one. It's a prime to add to the collection of primes. Or you can add to your collection of primes, right?
No, I'm not.
The 20 millimeter f1.8S for Z mount.
Mm-hmm.
These are fun lenses, but when you start getting this wide and fast, it's a unique combination of traits.
Yeah.
Because most wide-angle lenses, you think about wide-angle shots, they have lots of depth of field, and you shoot at f8 or something, and everything is in focus. Well, with a lens like this, you can open it up to f1.8, and you can get some bokeh,
mm-hmm.
and you can get some out-of-focus areas, especially if you do close-ups.
You have to get pretty close,
You know, like a foot away.
Yep.
But it's a nice low-light lens, and the application... Now, I own... I think you own...
No.
No? Okay, so I own the F-mount version of this lens,
mm-hmm.
which is smaller and lighter, actually. It's a decent lens. I use it specifically for astrophotography purposes, so night sky stuff. And maybe we'll make that a topic of another episode
someday.
But night sky, where you want wide and you want fast. So if you do a lot of night sky photography, and in fact, the promotional material that I saw from Nikon showed a lot of kind of, you know, twilight shots almost like light painting. And a fast lens helps you there because you'll see more stars and things appear in the sky.
Yeah.
And it's good. So if you want a native lens that autofocuses in the S mount for that type of application, this is probably a good choice.
Yeah. The alternative use, you know, and I've talked about it several times in the podcast, is sometimes when I'm traveling or doing other things, I choose not to use zooms, but I go with a 24, 35, 85 combo.
Okay.
And I've done that for decades for some of my shooting. Sometimes in the past, I would use a 20 instead of a 24. Just special case where I was going to be and some things that I knew I was likely to do. But generally speaking, I like the 24 better in that trio. And I've already got the 24, so
right. Check. Yeah.
20
is wide.
But the 24 is outstanding. I think the 20 is going to be outstanding.
Exactly.
Looking at the MTF curves and stuff.
Yeah. I mean, it's if you need that particular focal length, it's not a common just photojournalist focal length or anything like that. 24 is more typical of your sort of, these days, what you would consider a wide angle lens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's wide enough to be wide, but not crazy that you're pushing everything out of the frame. You got to be careful when you use a 20.
That is the separation point between pretty darn easy to use and you have to give it some thought.
Yeah, you do. I mean, and again, I like using mine, my F-mount one, on the occasional subject that you can get very close to.
Yeah.
And get an out-of-focus background, shoot it, you know, like at F2 or something.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. Optically, this is going to be a wonderful design.
Oh, yeah.
Price tag is somewhere around $1,000. I can't remember exactly, but not inexpensive. So you have to think about it if you want to add that one to your bag.
Right.
The other announcement was a little bit unusual. I mean, not unusual, but just, I guess, less expected from us. But I guess it's on the roadmap somewhere if I had paid attention to it. And that's the 24-200 f4 to f6.3, so the variable aperture VR lens for Z. It's not an S lens, but probably doesn't have quite the same robust build. This
but is it's probably fine.
I'm sure it's fine.
Yeah.
Interesting thing. When it first came out, I thought, I don't know. And then I started thinking about it. And then I called you on the phone. We're both talking about
and
it.
And I was a bad influence.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so we've both pre-ordered this lens, actually.
Yeah.
And I think for the same reason.
Yeah. And I don't think either one of us expected to get that lens.
No, it wouldn't have been if you had told me. Now, I know that on the roadmap somewhere out there is a 24-105 F4S, which will probably be a wonderful, wonderful lens. But both you and I like to travel a lot. And when you started looking at the size, the weight, the focal length range, and then take a look at the MTF curves.
Which are very promising.
Yeah, I mean, they look, well, I'll put it this way. My two travel lenses in the past have been the 24-120 F4 and sometimes a 28-300 whatever, 3.5 to 5, 4.5 to 5.6, whatever those two. And then I pair them with a wide lens. With the idea being that I can have a pretty much a two-lens combo or even a one-lens rig sometimes with that 24-120 for when I'm in Europe or traveling around and just playing tourist. Well, this sort of fits that.
Yeah, yeah. And I've done the same thing with both the 24-120 and the 28-300. The 28-300 in particular, I just never was that happy with it. It was okay. It wasn't a bad lens or anything, but it was a little bit on the bulky side to have on the camera all the time.
Right.
And then the other thing is I found that to get results that were okay, I definitely had to stop it down a bit. So for me, it turned into a lens that I could use at F8 or F11. Take your pick.
Right.
And so it was a little bit confining.
Right. And a 24-120 is a decent lens, but if you look at its MTF, and the results bear this out, it wide at the 24 end, it's not all that great.
Right.
It's a little bit mushy in the corners. Not bad.
Yeah.
I mean, I've certainly used it plenty, and I have no qualms about using it, because compared to having to change lenses and do all that other stuff. So I took a quick look at the MTF charts for this new lens, against those two other F-mount lenses. And in both cases, at the wide end and at the telephoto lens end, the charts seem to suggest that they will perform better. They'll have better sharpness than either of those two F-mount options.
Yeah, it looked pretty clear.
So given that I was completely comfortable using those lenses with my, you know, D850 for travel, I started looking at the other things, and this is a fairly compact lens. It's a little bit bigger than the 24-70 kit lens that comes with the, obviously it extends longer than that, but it weighs 70 grams more than the 24-70 f4.
Just nothing.
And the challenge that I've had with shooting my Z for travel is that I need something longer than 70 millimeters most of the time.
Yeah, and it would be nice not to change lenses
exactly
quite as often.
So my solution had been in the past, like when I went to Scotland with clients in the fall, pack the 70-200 f4, which is a nice lens.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also, by the time you add that and you add the FTZ adapter, it's an extra kilogram.
Yeah,
you know.
And I've also, in addition to that one, used the 70-300. It's like AFP.
Oh, the new one. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not a bad lens.
No, it's not. It's not as sharp as the 70-200 f4 I've compared, mm-hmm. but it's not bad at all. So it's very usable. And it's a little bit lighter. But I think this might just work as a travel lens. I have a habit of getting travel lenses and then not liking them. So I'm really hoping this one reverses
it. We'll hope so. I mean,
we will let people know.
I have a workshop in Croatia in late April, mm-hmm. and I'm hoping I get this one in time for that. Because when I added it up, I can bring two lenses, and we're gonna be on a motor yacht. It's a cruise in Croatia, so you don't want to be changing lenses a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And for a lot of the shooting, 24 is as wide as you need most of the time. And yeah, I'll bring my 14-30 to have,
because it's small.
And yeah, it doesn't cost me anything, but I'm gonna shave almost a full kilogram out of my kit by leaving that 70-200 at home, not needing a three lens kit. I can do it with two lenses. And if the images and the corners aren't just quite as sharp, well, you know what?
Yeah.
You know, and like I said, I was shooting with the 24-120, which on paper looks worse than this lens. And I was happy with it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just,
right.
You have to accept the fact sometimes that the best glass is one that is good to shoot with, not necessarily the best optics.
Mm-hmm.
You have to get past
it. As long as it's good enough.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to take Coke bottles with you.
Right.
Right, but there are lenses that are perfectly adequate for certain applications where having the flexibility of one lens, you know, one zoom, just is better than having the classic sure. three zoom, you know, three zoom lens kit, you know, the wide, the 24-70, the 70-200.
Right. No, I hope it works out. Because so, it would be nice.
Optimistic.
And then we can both end up with the 24-105 sometime later.
Probably. Well, that's probably going to be the higher quality lens. And it's certainly supposed to be a fixed f4, so they say. So, but, you know, that one's, as of yet, doesn't exist. So let's go with what you got. Now, you mentioned there's a new L bracket that's available for
this. Yeah, we're switching topics, by the way.
Yeah, okay. So those are the lenses. Those are the new products. This is a not so new product, but it's relatively recent.
Yeah, so this is just a little tip for anyone that bought a Z50 and has been looking for an L bracket. Some of the major manufacturers like Really Right Stuff and Kirk aren't making any for it. You know, at best, they've got kind of a generic L bracket that, you know, sort of fits, sort of works. But there's a company called Three-Legged Thing that just came out with one. I just got it. I think you'll put a link to B&H.
Yeah,
because you can get it from there.
Okay, I'll link to it
and
on our site.
It appears to be nice, looks well-made, cheaper than the other
good.
Brands would have been. And I did double-check, and it works just fine with the Really Right Stuff quick-release clamps? Platform and clamp, which can be problematic sometimes, but it works fine.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. So I recommend it based on what I've seen so far with it.
So if you have a Z50, I'm talking to you, Jessica, my sister.
Oh, yeah. She, that's
right. And you need an L bracket. Here you go. I know she got one.
I'm not going to leave the L bracket on there all the time like I do with some other cameras.
No, it's a little camera. I mean, you're mostly not. But if you're going to do landscape work with it.
It'll be nice to have.
Yeah, exactly.
Or night shots.
And then the last thing that we want to touch on was that just the other day, Nikon released firmware 3.0. Well, they released firmware for the Z6 and 7 3.0, and they did do a minor release for the Z50.
It's very minor, though.
But it's mostly new lens support.
Yeah.
And in the Z, they changed some things around. The two major features are as follows. One is that they've added more support for CF Express cards. So before, there was, like, I think, one manufacturer that they supported, which I think was the Sony Type B. Mm-hmm. And now they support, I think, Lexar and, oh, there's another one, Profast or something. I can't remember what it was. But anyway, we're going to talk about memory cards in another episode, but it's just forward, they're just forward-proofing these cameras to be able to use the newer spec'd memory cards. They're the same form factor as XQD.
Yeah. One thing I will say, you know, since we're not talking a whole lot about it today, I would not jump on those cards if what you're expecting is your camera to suddenly function much faster and better. It might even go slower. Most likely it'll seem about the same.
Right.
So, yeah, we'll save that.
And they're expensive.
Yeah, we'll save that for a future episode, but it may just be downloading speeds at best.
Right. But the other big thing, and then of course they do bug fixes. They do. Mm-hmm. There's some stuff. There's some slight variance between the Z6 and Z7. But the bigger thing was this: the way you can invoke the subject tracking mode.
Mm-hmm.
We want to talk just briefly in the time we have left to talk about what's different and where you might use this subject tracking mode.
Yeah, and is. Best as we can tell so far, we don't think they made large-scale changes to the focusing algorithms involved in tracking.
As far as I can tell, it behaves the same way.
I mean,
way.
They did put in algorithms to handle cat and dog.
Oh, right.
Eye detection.
Yes, eye detection and face detection of pets, so cats and dogs.
Yeah.
And I can say it doesn't work on my parrot.
Yeah, it's not a cat
because
or
it
dog.
Doesn't, he's
yeah.
not a, neither. But
I'm not an expert on biology, but I do know that.
That's right. Norwegian blue, he is not.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's actually, I have to say that there are times when we like to take pictures of our pets. That's not mm-hmm. a bad feature. You might as well have it in there.
Yeah.
So I'll have to test that when I have more access to a dog or a cat.
Okay.
Stan, if you're out there listening,
I have neither. So
okay,
well, at the moment,
we know one of our listeners has at least two cats. So you can try it on. But this focus tracking is a subset of auto area focus mode. And once upon a time, we talked about all the focus modes. And the auto area mode is where the camera kind of just picks the subject for you.
Yeah, fun. See if it picks the one that you're interested in.
But this is where you can access face detection mm-hmm. and as a subset of that, eye detection. Now,
which are wonderful features.
Those are really good. So that's a thing. And then there's this tracking mode. And what it does is when you invoke it, you get a little focusing square in the center of or you can move it around your frame. And then you place it on a subject and then... if you then turn the tracking mode on, it attempts to follow the subject around the frame and keep the... So it's like moving your focus point around for you instead of having to use a little joystick. Mm-hmm. And it's always been a little clunky to use because you got to press OK button several times to
do
this.
And then a little bit different button to get out of it and some other goofy things with how it was implemented.
So the big change now is that you can set one of the function buttons on your Z6 or 7, like the function 2 button, for example.
Yeah, these are the either the function 1 or 2 button. They're the ones on the front.
Yeah, the
kind of where the depth of field preview button was on older cameras. Yeah,
exactly. And so you can toggle one of those so that if you're in auto area mode, pressing that button brings up the reticule first. And then what happens is when you press AF on or half press your shutter, if you've got it set that way, the camera not only begins to autofocus, but it also immediately turns on the follow tracking function. Whereas before, that was a separate button press that you had to do.
Yeah.
And when you release the button, and this is, I think, the cool part, that it automatically resets the square back to where you started from.
The button being the AF on button or the shutter release.
Correct. You release your AF on button or your half press of the shutter. Whereas in the past, that didn't happen.
Right.
You can still use it in the old way by using the OK button. You can do that. So we thought, you know, this is interesting. We thought we would just briefly mention where you might find this to be a useful function.
Yeah. Do you want to go with the more common one and then I can talk about the super secret mode, which isn't really.
Yeah, it's all good. Well, I mean, the way that Nikon presented it, and we talked about before, is when, generally speaking, if you were shooting, let's say you were shooting on a tripod or something with a fixed composition where you have a subject, and their example in the manual is a tennis player, moving around. So you've got a subject that's pretty clearly separate from the background. You know, you can imagine a tennis player wearing white and on a green court or a blue court. And you just want to have the same framing so the net is always in the same spot. And you just let the camera focus on the subject wherever he or she may go across in the court. This works pretty well for that. It's using color and contrast mostly to detect a subject. So if you have it on a bird or something, it's not going to know the front or the head from the back. You know, it's not that smart. But it will follow subjects through the frame. But then the alternative is to use it to keep your, instead of having to use your focus points, right?
Yeah, it's actually something I used first on a different camera. What you can do is, let's just say you're on a trip, like we were talking about earlier, you're traveling, and you're doing a mix of shots of people, and you're taking photos of local architecture, going into a market, whatever. And so you're kind of switching back and forth between shots of people or, you know, fairly generic kind of scenes where an automatic focusing system that, you know, guesses on where you want to focus is likely to be correct. And then maybe you've got some things that are a little bit more precise where it's not going to go to the right spot, but you want to be able to position the autofocus cursor in the right area.
So if you have a bowl of fruit stand and you want to focus on the bananas, let's say.
Right. Or, you know, and you're afraid that it might go to the peaches or something like that.
Right.
What you can do is kind of sit in that auto area mode is your normal mode. And you can toggle on and off the eye detection. Mm-hmm. So if you're specifically trying to do shots of people and you want, you know, eyes sharply in focus, you can have that on. But if you're doing the peaches and bananas or whatever, you can use that tracking mode and engage it. And rather than having to move your cursor around the screen with a little joystick or the D-pad thing, you can actually let the tracking do that for you. So you'll start, let's say, on the bananas.
And let's say you're
in the middle.
Yeah, in the center.
But you want to maybe do a little bit of rule of thirds thing and move it off. You just keep the autofocus engaged, either with the AF on button or the shutter release, and then just point the camera to the composition you want, and the focus area for the bananas will move with the bananas.
Right. You don't refocus on the background because it's locking on the...
Right.
It's tracking the subject. And we talked about it once before, but it bears repeating. When Nikon talks about focus tracking... And the subject tracking is what they're talking about here. They mean following a subject around the viewfinder frame.
Right.
Not necessarily focus tracking on an object moving towards you or away from you. It does that too with continuous servo focusing, but what they mean here is subject tracking across the frame.
Right. And in this case, it could be banana tracking.
Right.
And you're the one that's
right
causing things to move.
Right. Where I find this doesn't work is with low contrast, when there's not good separation between your subject and your background, or when you want precise placement of your autofocus.
Right.
You know, if you want it on the head of the deer versus the, you know, it doesn't necessarily know. But for objects that are, or subjects that are moving across your frame, it can do a pretty good job.
Yeah.
You get multiple subjects of the similar colors, you know, and they start overlapping and the camera will get fooled. The nice thing about this new enhancement, the way the controls work though, is that all you'd have to do if that happened would be to let go of the AF on button or the half press of your shutter. The focus point resets to wherever it was.
Like in the middle.
In the middle or wherever, right. And then you can refocus. So just pump the focus.
Yeah. Now the key thing, if you're using it the way I describe, which is sort of a, I think, not really their intent, is just watch the size of the focus patch. It's not as small.
Right. It's as, a fairly large square.
Yeah. But it's not horribly big either. So that's the only thing you really need to watch. If the size of the patch is a whole lot bigger than your subject, then it may focus on the wrong thing. But other than that, it actually works pretty well.
All right. So if you've seen anything new, you being our listeners out there, if you have any personal firsthand experience with any of this stuff or start to see any improvements to autofocus that we should be aware about, drop us a note over at our Facebook page, facebook.com/imagedoctors.
Yep.
And we always appreciate your suggestions for show topics. And if we screwed something up, please let me know.
One last thing I'll mention too, regarding that tracking mode.
Mm-hmm.
The day that this podcast comes out, you and I are going to be shooting in Southeast Colorado.
We hope,
trying to photograph snow geese and some other birds. And so we're going to try to put this to use on a little bit more challenging subject than we've done so far. So if we find ourselves having radically different views, positive or negative,
we'll let you know.
We'll let you know in an episode, but we'll probably put them on our Facebook page too. Right.
Okay.
Well, maybe with some pictures.
That's great. Well, thanks again for your patience while listening to us ramble on about gear.
Yep.
And until next time, we will see you and happy shooting.
All right. Bye-bye.